Jim, it's the world of bonds. It's happy uninversion yield curve day, Friday the 12th of January 2023. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. Yes, it happened finally this morning, US time, something like 9 o'clock over there. The US Treasury yield curve moved from an inversion, as we've been for a while now, to a teeny tiny degree of upward slope. So 2-year yields, Treasury bond yields, hit their lowest levels since May last year. So they're down at 4.16%. Remember, they were at 5.25% nearly, 5.21% as recently as October. And at the same time as they were collapsing, 30-year US Treasury yields are 3 basis points higher in yield on the day at 4.21%. So we now have a 4 basis points upward slope, 2s, 30s. Remember, that's not the only measure of yield curve slope that people look at. 2s, 10s, 2s, 5s are generally used as the ones historically that predicted recession on the way. But nevertheless, 2s, 30s is a good one too. And now we have a 4 basis point upward slope. What were the triggers for today's move? Well, not just today, really. It started yesterday with actually stronger than anticipated US CPI inflation. So the headline inflation rate in the States for DEC came in at 0.3% positive. And that was about a tenth higher than hoped for. And core inflation was in line, but again, a positive number. The upward surprise, though, came largely in shelter. So shelter was nearly 0.5 on the month. And that gave the market a bit of hope that the Fed's measure of inflation that it looks at, which is the PCE price deflator, a slightly different measure than CPI that everyone else uses, that they, you know, maybe that will be lower because that has a lower weighting to rents and housing costs within it than the CPI number did. So if that was the reason that CPI was a bit higher than expected, and it's got a lower weight in the PC deflator, maybe that will be going more in the right direction. We're looking for excuses here, really, aren't we? So actually, the short end started rallying on an inflation print that was stronger than expected. And you can probably hear me over the podcast shrugging my shoulders. It's one of those situations where probably the market was just looking for an excuse to move higher, and we've been in that situation for over a month now. We know there are trillions and trillions of US dollars, I think someone said $7 trillion of cash sitting in money market accounts, and that's starting to come out and just going into bonds, and we call it grab-a-thon in credit and all of those sorts of things. You don't really want to be, or people don't want to be, sat in cash and money market funds when everything else is going up and that money has started to move in a big way. Anyway, the trend continued today in terms of the short end rallying in the States with real weak inflation data. So we're looking now at the PPI, the producer prices inflation, effectively, that fell 0.1% in December. This is factory prices, the prices that manufacturers pay for their inputs and prices that they charge for their outputs as well. So looking at those, we have a negative month in December. November was also revised into deflation territory, and October negative too. So headline is now just at 1% year on year, and core at 1.8%. So both below forecasts, both below 2%, and both having 3 months in a row of, well, certainly the headline, 3 months in a row of negative numbers. And this is the first time outside of the pandemic that we've seen 3 consecutive monthly negative PPI prints, first time since 2015. This means now the market, WIRP, is pricing in a 79.5% of the first Fed rate cut coming in March. So money market saying we're 2.5 months away from the first cut. one cloud to that rosy scenario, and thinking about PPI in particular, might be what's going on in the Middle East, and particularly what's going on in the Red Sea. As you know, last night, the Royal Navy and the US Navy attacked bases in the Yemen using missiles and airplanes. And there have been missile attacks on shipping, and I think Iran captured an oil tanker yesterday. So there's a lot of instability going on there, which is causing many shippers to take the long way around, going the other side up of Africa to get to Europe and back, adding a lot of costs. If you look at shipping costs, they have gone up as well. Obviously, that's also related to higher insurance costs and so forth. So that might be a bit of a something that will cause PPI to blip up at some stage in the future. An example of that might be, for instance, Tesla has closed its Berlin car factory for 2 weeks as a result of supply disruptions caused by longer shipping times. So, you know, that this is something to be aware of as military activity increases in the Middle East. The other impact might well be on the oil price. It's been relatively well behaved so far. It is up about $6 from December's low. So we're now at $74 a barrel on the WTI measure of inflation. That is up, but it's still way below the $94 that we got to in September for that measure. So there is some upside potential there, which could cause PPI and headline inflation rates more generally to start misbehaving again. Back to the uninversion, though, does it matter? And I guess not really, especially as so far the reverse, the inversion that we've seen over the past years hasn't resulted in its traditional recession. Remember, you know, people saying, including myself, that historically, pretty much 100% of the time, a yield curve inversion, probably looking at 2s 10s rather than 2s 30s, but a yield curve inversion always results in, or that implies some sort of causation, but is always kind of contiguous with a recession. This time, it does frankly seem that that historical relationship may not be true. You know, it seems pretty unlikely that we're going to get a US recession this year. Doesn't mean we won't, but it seems quite unlikely given the strong employment backdrop that we remain in. And the fact that rates have come down, financial conditions have eased a lot since the end of the third quarter of last year. So, you know, even the employment data we're seeing at the moment, jobless claims number, exceptionally low, we just had out of the US. So it seems unlikely. There's still time for the model to work, but we are seeing the uninversion, the disinversion start happening, and yield curves are turning back to the normal shape that we know and love. Anyway, if March is the first cut that we get from the Fed, what does history tell us is going to happen to bonds here on in? Well, on average, 3 months before the Fed's first rate cut, 10-year bond yields, 10-year Treasury bond yields, fall by 90 basis points. At the low end of that scale, in 1981, after the first rate cut of that mini cycle, bond yields fell just 50 basis points. The year before was also a cutting activity. For the first time, 1980, there was 250 basis points of 10-year bond yields falling in that year. But on average, 90 basis points. Let's say that's going to happen this time around. Who knows? But let's say it is. Well, what was 3 months before March the 20th, which is the date of the next Fed meeting, or that March Fed meeting? 3 months before that, if my maths is good, is the 20th of December. On that date, 10-year Treasury yields were 384 basis points. We're now at 395 basis points. So we're kind of looking at a 10-year Treasury bond yield below 3% by March, which looks ambitious. It looks quite aggressive, especially remember that we have seen an aggressive move already from 10-year bond yields. We're up at 5% in October, and you could make the argument that a lot of that anticipation has occurred already. We've already seen over a 90 basis point move in 10-year Treasury bond yields since October in anticipation of this. So maybe we might be expecting a move in Treasuries that's less than the 90 basis points average, but let's wait and see. Right, that's all the historical data you're going to get for today. Have a lovely weekend and catch you next week. Bye.